Hi, I'm Pat Lamb, and you're listening to Bears Beyond the Gate. Enjoy.
And he's going to score Bristol's third try. What a great play by Augustine Pichot.
And Bristol have made a bit of history, winning the European Challenge Cup for the first time ever.
And Bristol have won.
You're listening to Bears Beyond the Gate, a Bristol Bears podcast made by fans for fans. We're 2.5 season card holders at Ashton Gate. We love the club, the game and all things Bears. Finally, after nearly 8 weeks, the Premiership is back. We hear from the Daily Telegraph's chief rugby writer, Charlie Morgan, who gives us his thoughts on, let's face it, a weird season so far, both in terms of the league in general and the fluctuating fortunes of the Bears more specifically. We discuss his comments and then look forward to the six-match run-in that starts on Friday night under the lights against Saints. Pat has given his thoughts with a fairly detailed interview on Bears TV, but we give ours too and try to predict what sort of team and result we are likely to see. I'm Pete and I'm joined by Miles and Lee for a cheeky beer and a bit of rugby banter. Well, boys, we're back on the midweek Zoom. Can't make this a habit, lads, can we? But, you know, need must. It's not easy trying to coordinate three very, very busy people for an amateur podcast. But I did stick out that DocuPod on Sunday to keep the fans happy. The interview with Paul Morgan, it's quite a long one.
Charlie's
who we're talking to tonight, mate. Paul Morgan.
Oh, God.
Couple of more.
This is why we can do a midweek pod.
I just point out, Pete. You know, we're not drinking, but Lee's got a pewter tankard goodness sake. No wonder he's gone astray already.
Absolutely. No, just to clarify that little interchange. Paul Morgan, who is the comms lead for Premier Women's Rugby, who used to be the director of communications for Premier Rugby and the Rugby World editor. We released a little interview with him on Sunday where I did with him last week, where he talked about the women's game. It's what I call a docu-pod. Charlie Morgan is the chief rugby writer for the Daily Telegraph, and who I spoke to last week and who we're going to hear from in a minute. And he has given us his thoughts on the run-in and Friday night. So is that clear, everybody?
Yeah, it's a lot clearer than it was. Like, I kind of missed Sunday quite a bit, Pete, to be honest.
Yes, teacher. All understood.
I know. Well, I should have planned it a little bit more and sent the PowerPoints out to you first so that you could read them through. But anyway, boys, we're here. But I think, obviously, as I said in the intro, it's been a long time. There's been, well, since that quite exciting night at Ashton Gate when Bath rocked into town and we scored numerous tries. And then since then, there was the Crusaders game. And then there has been that kind of Friday hit out at Bedford where virtually everybody played. But of course, yeah, we are now back in business on Friday night. So I don't know, boys, I think the best thing is let's listen to what Charlie Morgan had to say. And then we can sort of comment on it afterwards. Okay, so thanks very much, Charlie, for coming on. I do appreciate it. I know you've been juggling bedtimes and stuff like that, something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners know and remember or are in the middle of as well. But it's kind of been a fallow period for us club fans, but obviously for yourself, I imagine it's been really, really busy. What with the Six Nations, and obviously I know you do your own podcast as well. So how's it been recently?
Of hectic, and that's before you throw in sort of toddlers trying to wrestle toddlers to bed. Really to pull back the curtain. Thank you very much for your patience tonight. I was trying to be a Six Nations journalist father, which is you find yourself coming up short quite a lot. But thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
That's all right. I mean, there hasn't really been a lot of Bristol interest in the Six Nations, but I suppose the one player that has we've had is Genji, although we haven't actually seen him play for Bristol for quite a while, to be fair. But actually, I don't know about you. I thought he probably had his best game for England for quite a while on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. That the moment that sticks out to me actually really stuck out at the time was when Ireland actually outflanked England, didn't they? They got out on the outside of that blitz defence, and Genge sort of just put the hammer down, didn't he? He accelerated and got across. I'm not sure whether he actually made the tackle himself, crowded out Ireland on that left edge, and then England won the turnover a couple of phases later. I think he is clearly such a respected figure within that group that, and I agree with you that I think that was a kind of as assured a performance as he's had for a while for England, and he would have been frustrated to miss further.
Yeah, well,
it was a foot injury on the back of the injury that he'd had the hamstring, wasn't it? So that would have been annoying for him, and I think he would have been really pleased with how that went. Yeah, and then we had a press conference with Alan Walters, the fitness, their conditioning kind of guru there at England, and he said that moment really stuck out to him as just really being emblematic of England's desire throughout the game. Yeah, and that's certainly rung true for me as well.
Well, I just hope he brings that form back to Ashton Gate when it's all over. Anyway, obviously, I wasn't really here to ask you about England, although it is fascinating to talk to you about it. But actually, what we're here for is that you're here to help us kind of preview the Premiership restart, which is on March the 22nd. So I thought I'd just sort of ask, firstly start by asking you what your take on the Prem season has been so far up to this kind of very extended fallow period. And then after that, you know, what you think is going to happen more generally, and perhaps a few comments specifically about the Bears and what they might do.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. I mean, it's been a really, really interesting season. I think on the backdrop still, we're still sort of, squads are still sorting themselves out with both the lower salary cap, I know that's going to go up again, but and also the kind of unfortunate circumstance of Wasps, Worcester and Northern Irish going under. But what's been really interesting to me is that how that's redistributed talent around the league. And Bristol have come out of that really well, especially that first choice lock pairing. I think they've been two of the best second rows in the entire league. It seems to me maybe that Bristol still, and I don't know whether, I mean, I'm sure you'll be sick of kind of discussing the Bristol ball game, but it does seem that there's still a bit of a hangover from that as far as playing style and being caught between. I think when you're almost looking at Bristol sometimes and wondering whether they're figuring themselves out again as far as a tactical side, and whether they're all in or intricate phase play that we know. I just remember talking to players and how Pat Lam had these phase maps, and how these things were really kind of intricately thought out, and when it was at its best, and when there was firepower among that, and when the ball movement was really slick and players were getting into, you were getting kind of X factor players in space, that looked really, really good. But now there's sort of this, you know, do they look a little bit worried about playing too much in their own half? And it does seem there's this little sort of maybe a psychological little friction going on where they're just trying to figure out kind of how they can be most effective and what approach they need to strike to do that. But overall, it's been a fascinating season, in the first game Bristol have back. I know for sure, speaking to someone from Saints a couple of weeks ago, they're viewing it as a banana skin. I think the next stage of this season, and it's another really interesting kind of subplot, is how teams kick on from having this huge break, what they've done. I think it'll be under the microscope who's kind of use this period better. Players will hope squads will kind of be replenished with in players from it that have been injured coming back, but also they'll have to reintegrate internationals, and Saints are top by, and they've got a nice little buffer now, but also that can change very quickly, and they've got this kind of new problem of having contributed a lot of England players. So that's going to be it feels like a sprint to the finish now. World Cup seasons are always a bit disjointed and a bit weird anyway, but so I wouldn't be surprised if there are a few shocks to come.
Yeah, no, it's interesting what you said about Bristol, because we interviewed Dave Atwood recently, actually, and also Joe Joyce, who were at kind of in the thick of it. And one of Dave Atwood's comments was that you know, everybody expected us to win and they expected us to win and the narrative we were going to win, and it was all going well. And then when it didn't, they just didn't have the team experience to know what to do, and they started panicking. And I think maybe you're right. And then, you know, the fans kind of got quiet and so forth. And I think you're right. It's that perhaps on the back of that, there was a bit of worry that, you know, we just couldn't handle that. And the same Pat obviously, you know, changed the game plan a little bit and perhaps went a bit more conservative and we lost our identity. Although it was quite interesting. I don't know if you must have picked up before the Bath game when he came out on telly and basically said Steve Lansdowne had rung him up and said, you've got to stop this kicking. You've got to start playing the Bears way again. And I don't know what you, as a kind of journalist, thought about that, because it was quite un-Pat-like to kind of give away that. It was very interesting.
I guess you could frame it as Pat sort of maybe taking a bit of pressure off, because that's so obviously an edict from above him that's how the kind of powers that be at the club want to play. But it does to me also kind of really hammer home as that friction that I'm talking about. You know, this is our identity, but actually a lot of data says that teams shouldn't really be playing two phases around halfway. I remember I just looked back actually to see sort of the first few results after that, after that semi-final loss, and I'd forgotten that it was the Saracens game straight after that, which was just a real classic Saracens rope-a-dope, wasn't it? It was defense kicking, one card in there. I think Alex Lewinton scored out wide, and then they just squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and it was a real classic kind of Saracens performance. But I was looking back because I remember the first time that Bristol played Harlequins, first time since that semi-final, and in the press in the week I asked Pat, do you think there's going to be any psychological damage that you're going to have to get over before this game? And to be fair, he hated the question. I think really, really hated the question, because he was just sort of saying, yeah, look, absolutely, it was a process that, you know, there were mistakes that we looked back on at that game, and we know where we need to be better. We know where we know how to kind of rectify what went wrong. And there was a pretty horrible result, wasn't it? Afterwards, and it, to be honest, watching it live again, that game, that second Harlequins game, that sort of reinforced my feeling that it wasn't just, you know, that there was psychological damage that needed to be get over. And maybe it's just still in this rebuild kind of phase from that. It's been a long time since, but you've had a lot of things happen since then, you know, just less kind of getting themselves together, Saracens being back in the league. Now this Saints seem to be this next side that have kind of consolidated. But it's seriously competitive. And some things are going very, very nicely for Bristol. I think Ben Jensen van Rensburg has been a fantastic signing. As I mentioned, those two locks. Gabriel Algray has been a really good signing. I think he's got a really, really exciting future. But it just is very competitive. And, you know, there are just every season, some clubs are going to be disappointed. And if you're a little bit off, you're going to be sinking down to that lower middle table.
Yeah, I mean, we're currently eighth. But, I mean, actually, when you look at it, I mean, we're only 4 points off sixth, I think, and not that far off fourth, really. And who knows? I mean, there's nothing really that suggests we're going to put together a really consistent run to get there, but you never know. So, I mean, here's your opportunity for the worst sort of question that you get is, you know, who do you think, you know, or what do you think will be the top four at the end of the season? And have you got some sort of hunch in your mind about who might actually win the thing eventually?
Well, I'll do the first bit first. I think Saints will hold on, although I wouldn't be surprised if they don't get a home semi-final. And if they don't get a home semi-final, I think it's out on the final. They're playing so brilliantly. They've got the kind of emotional factor of Courtney Laws being kind of getting his send off. But maybe below the kind of the home semi-final. So I'd go, I think, Bath, Saracens, Saints, and absolutely cheat and have another look at the table to see who's there. fourth spot. Between Exeter and Harlequins. Do you know what? Whoa. How about give me Exeter? Give me Exeter sneaking in, yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually the winner. Do you think it'll be Saracens again?
And then to win it all, oi. I don't know why this one player keeps kind of popping into my mind. I think Tom Willis has been an amazing signing for Saracens, and I think if he's fit, and if they keep, they've got this just ridiculous. They were sort of hit by front row injuries, weren't they? I think if Saracens go out of Europe as I expect them to in that Bordeaux game, I think that they might just have. They just might be able to sort of focus on the league very, very nicely and get all their players back fit. And then that they would look very, very strong with obviously all the experience they've got. But I think a Saracens Bath final would be awesome. And, you know, I'm not to denigrate Saints either. I think they've been fantastic, but I just wonder whether they get edged out at the end again, heartbreakingly. As I've said, that it's going to be someone else, isn't it? It's going to be, you know, Leicester are going to make a mad dash. I've no idea, to be honest, is what I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, it's a stupid question, really, but it gives us. Thing is, we can then talk about it when we do our pod and say, "Oh, what does he know?"
You can get to the end of the season, and you've got me on record being an idiot. So that's great.
Yeah. Oh well, we've all been there. Well, look, I've got one last thing. I mean, one of the spin-offs that we've done as Bears Beyond the Gate. I mean, we were just four mates that talked about rugby and thought we'd turn it into a pod. Is that we write a kind of weekly Monday fans view column in the Bristol Post for free, I should say. And it's actually me and one of the other lads, and he wanted me to ask you, as a rugby writer, it's only a 400 word piece. So have you got any tips? I mean, we've been doing it quite a while and they still ask us. So we must be doing it relatively well. But, he wanted me to ask you, do you have tips for aspiring rugby writers, what would you say?
Always tell kind of people getting into the industry that you've got to be persistent. You've got to find a kind of middle ground between being persistent and annoying. So if you're persistent with sort of badgering contacts, badgering kind of press officers for interviews, I think that's really, really good. But you don't want to be so annoying that you you kind of terminally end that relationship, I guess. And as far as writing itself, I mean, we're very much hot on or told to kind of keep our intros very kind of snappy, very grabby. I love detail. I love reading about detail. From a fan's point of view, what you've got in your, I really don't want to sound like I'm lecturing here, but what you've got in your favor as like a match going fan, which also journalists have, is you're seeing things that aren't on TV. You're seeing little kind of interactions between staff members on the touchline and players off the ball, and how much players are working off the ball. We just talked at the beginning about how Ellis Genge, that was quite obvious, wasn't it, on the telly, even watching it back, but live it's just really palpable, isn't it, how much work these players are doing off the ball. And I just think that's, you can really use that in your favor if you're actually going to these games. So I hope that's enough. And then brilliant. You're just always kind of humble enough to know that you, whatever you write is probably going to look stupid every now and then. Yeah. You might look like Nostradamus a few times a season, but then you're setting yourself up to fall, but that's what keeps us coming back.
Have you ever written anything about the Bears that has kind of felt has been a bit controversial and you were a little, you know, it's affected your relationship with the press office? Or have you got what's it like, your relationship with the Bears?
I'm not just saying this. They're great, brilliant operators. Will and Tom Tatton before him, just fantastic. Really forthcoming with how they want to promote the game. They're almost pitching ideas to you. I interviewed Tom actually for a piece last season, I think,
and he was
fantastic. And he's there are. the more people that think about the game like him, the better it's going to be over the next 2 decades, and it's a crucial 2 decades. I think they were really, a couple of times, have been really helpful, sort of with salary cap kind of reports, and just being sort of quite good about when you come to them with information and steers, and they can kind of tell you the right way to go or whatever, or kind of tip you off if you're on the right track or that sort of thing. I remember the other way around, Bristol thrashed Leicester 43 back in a COVID, I think, and I wrote sort of quite a scathing piece about, I mean, this goes to show, right, wrote a scathing piece about Leicester from that game. And I think because Leicester were in such a bad way, it didn't even register with them, but then they went on to kind of obviously build from there. But no, I think I haven't got one off the top of my head, but maybe that's because I've kind of pissed so many people off, I can't remember. I hope not.
Was that one with Tom Tainton, the one when he talked about people should make noise during the kicking? That was really interesting article. He did get quite a lot of debate over that one. So that's fascinating. Well, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate the time that you've given me and the hassle it was to actually get here. So it's great stuff. And if we ever see you down Ashton Gate, we'll buy you a cider. But the last question we always ask is, are you a Thatcher's Gold man, or would you be a Thatcher's Haze?
Gold. Gold. Hit me with gold. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how Thatcher's favourite, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, and the other question I have to ask everyone, would you consider wearing a dry robe to watch rugby?
They look good. I haven't worn one before, but yeah, I mean, I've worn I'll sit on a scarf in a game because if the seats are cold. Sandy Park's bad for that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that means that I'm game for anything, really. Yeah. I don't mind looking stupid as long as I'm warm.
Fair enough. That's a good answer. Well, I really appreciate it, Charlie. Thanks very much for that.
No worries at all.
So there you go, boys. I mean, yet again, I've got to say how welcoming the kind of wider rugby world are for, let's face it, jokers like us. Charlie, great guy. And I'd kind of arranged this Zoom with him. And I texted him about 15 minutes before to say, are you okay for it? And he was like, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm trying to put my like 1-year-old kid to bed and he won't go to bed and it's a disaster. I'll be with you in a bit. And then about kind of 20 minutes later, he said, I'm really struggling. I'm really, really sorry. And I was like, mate, honestly, don't worry about it. You know, we can reschedule. I just really appreciate it. But, you know, and then when he came on, he was very apologetic. And I thought, this is a guy that like has forgotten more about rugby than I know. And he's apologizing. So, so fair play to Charlie. But as you might imagine, as a national journalist, he had quite a lot of interesting things to say about the season so far and his view on the Bears and also the run-in. So I don't know, anyone want to kick off with a few comments on it? Lee, do you want to give it a go?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I love the fact that actually it was so lovely, the fact that he wasn't as prepared as what you would expect someone to be. And I mean, it just kind of, it gives me a lot more hope for the future. You know, it's almost as amateur as me and you two boys together on a Sunday evening.
I think, to be fair, he was a bit flustered, but he got his act together quite quickly.
And to be fair, we all know what it's like trying to put a 1-year-old to bed, don't we? But it's not the easiest job in the world. But no, I mean, the it was a brilliant interview again, Pete. But there was a couple of things that I wanted to pick up on. And the thing that struck me probably most was the friction that he spoke about, because it was kind of like, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about when we listened to Pat Lam, the interview, saying Steve Lansdowne had come in and basically said, like, stop kicking the ball away and, you know, get back to the Bears' way. And obviously Charlie had picked up on some of that friction being close to the camp. And you know, it was kind of like that hit home to me a little bit, that, you know, even though we have been close in a lot of games and we aren't far away, there has definitely been a there's been a lot of tension, I think, between some sections of supporters, and we've had our, you know, we've been critical in the past as well. And, you know, it's just nice that someone from the outside point of view, you know, had that same kind of opinion.
Mm. No, I think it's a really good point. I mean, you can look at that in two ways. I mean, a successful team in some ways needs a bit of friction. You need a bit of bait. But also it can be a bad thing as well if it's not constructive. So, yeah, it is always I mean, this is why it's quite nice to talk to these guys that have got no particular agenda. You know, they're there just to talk to us, and that they have, you know, an outside view of our team is always very, very interesting. I mean, what did you think, Miles? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, and I love the fact that he's, you know, given up his evening really to chat to an amateur podcast, you know, that we claim to be. He was such a nice chap, really great. And he was fazed a little bit by your questioning, Pete. I could see that he had to look up the Premiership table, didn't he? And a fantastic guy. And I know we have tried to put Bristol to bed, but you got the question in there, Pete. You got the gyro question.
No, I didn't. He raised it. I didn't. I had put it to bed, and he just ripped off the display.
But, you know, we've put it to bed. But still, it's fascinating that a rugby journalist still can pick out some points that we hadn't even thought about, hadn't he? He talked about, you know, you agreed that we weren't prepared to, we're expected to win, we didn't win, and we didn't know what to do when things going wrong. And I loved the point, the fact that he'd interviewed quite a few players after that who discussed this really complex phase play that the Bears way is really sort of works around. And you're right, maybe that's, you know, where we've gone a little bit wrong this season. He chatted about we haven't had maybe the skilled players, the sort of Semis and the Charleses, to be able to put together this complex phase play. And maybe this is a reverb of Pat 2.0 that we're finally getting there. And maybe over the sort of next season, that's where we're going with integrating all these new players. But yeah, it's a great interview. Loved it.
Yeah, just to pick up on what Miles had just said then about the skill players, I disagree slightly because I feel like, you know, with Semi, really, we never really used him as anything more than a battering ram, as far as I can see. You know, he's like he was kind of get across the game line. And, you know, I kind of felt that, you know, at times we could have probably used Semi in a more constructive way than, you know, a more skillful way as such than we actually did. But I do feel like, as Miles has said, I think next season we are going to definitely be more of a batter and ram type of, you know, forward thinking team. And I do feel like it was picked up on the point of kicking the ball. We're almost scared to run from our own half, aren't we, a lot of the times this season. And I think we'll see a bit more of that next season as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. The other thing that I thought was interesting, Charlie said that after that semi-final debacle, he went back to see what we did afterwards. And do you remember that was when we didn't really have a pre-season, did we? Pat didn't have any pre-season games. And we had like one inter-club game, like house rugby or something like that. And then we had that terrible game against Saracens, first game up, when we were looking really good. We were all over them. Johan Noyd nearly scored in the corner. And I still maintain that Bini Vulapola just went flying in on over the top floor. And then they, Lazowski scored. And then they, as Charlie said, squeezed the game. And then we went to Wasps, didn't we? And I went on that game. We started for 5 minutes and then got hammered at Wasps. Yeah, and the whole season kind of fell apart. And I guess what he was trying to say was that, you know, we if we had maybe got our mojo back straight away and had got back to that kind of, despite the Harlequins result, had got back to that kind of exciting, intricate phase play that worked, we might have had a good season. And then it all tailed off, and then we started getting injuries and people left. And yeah, it was kind of an interesting viewpoint. I mean, the other thing I obviously asked him about was, you know, what was what he kind of felt about the season so far, because it's been a weird one, hasn't it? It's a World Cup season, but it's a World Cup season that started really early with the Premiership Cup and then have put this massive break in the middle that partly is to do with the fact that we're only, I guess, down to 10 clubs. So they felt as though that they could kind of they could do this and have the Six Nations as a massive block and then still just about be able to finish it afterwards. You know, I don't know. It's kind of, as he said, it's almost cut the season in half, and this restart is going to be almost like a sprint to the finish. It's almost as if the season that's happened so far could almost be irrelevant, and you know, anything could happen in these last games. So that, I thought that was a kind of interesting point, which is part of the reason I got him on, really, because I wanted him to say something interesting about it. But what do you think, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, it's not been great for supporters, has it, to be fair? I mean, I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, kind of having breaks during the season. And let's face it, you know, most of us couldn't afford to go and watch a Six Nations game. I mean, I know you were privileged, Pete, because you had friends in five places. But you know, it's not great. You're watching Six Nations on the TV, and as a, you know, it's not great for the club because we're having, you know, how many weeks has it been since we had a home game? But having said that, I am looking forward to Friday night because, you know, I think Saints are going to come down, and I do feel that we're going to be right up for it. I know we'll talk about team selection a bit later, but it is going to be as much as I've hated the fact we've had such a big break, it has given that kind of optimism. It's brought it all back again, ready for Friday night.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's like a pre-season, but it's not. It's a supercharged pre-season. It's not been about getting up to fitness, I guess. It's been about how well the teams have kept their kind of Ferraris purring, how they've oiled the engines, how they've, you know, how you've kind of put a bit of mileage in the tank, but not too much. And I think it is, I think I like the idea of the fact that we could get some really, really interesting results. I mean, if you think about Gloucester, for example, that have pretty much had a terrible, worse season than us, they've suddenly got silverware. And you look at their team and you think, actually, they're not a bad team. And we're going to play them, you know, in 2 weeks' time. And actually, you think, before the break, I might have thought that was a shoo-in. Now I'm not so sure. You know, and then he said about Saints that he had said that he'd got the inside track from a couple of Saints players that they were really worried about coming to the gate on Friday. Because he said, you know, it depends on how the teams cope with reintegrating England players. And this is something the Saints have had to deal with this season, is that they've got a lot of England players who've played a lot of matches. And we've only got one. And obviously we've got Genji, but that's an interesting kind of dilemma for us because he's probably played his best two games for a long time in recent weeks. Do we keep that momentum going? Do we stick him in on Friday to get him to get that kind of big England vibe? But of course, it's also allowed a lot of teams to... Well, the medical staff have gone to town on all the injured players, haven't they? And as we know from that Bedford game, it seemed like we virtually had emptied out our casualty ward. So it's going to be a really, really fascinating few weeks, I think.
Yeah, I think the interesting bit of that is, like, we do, it does feel like we've got everyone back fit. And whilst the other teams who have had lots of international players, you know, have been playing, we've got the boys that, you know, have been out for a long period of time all back again. So I do think you're right, Peter. We will see in the next few weeks some really almost kind of pre-season-esque results turn up. And I think it's going to be an interesting, you know, running of the last six games.
I mean, Miles, it's right, isn't it? I mean, we're only 4 points or 3 points off six and 6 points off four. You know, is it? Can we dare? Can we dare to dream, Miles?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're right. We've only got six games left. I think we've played something in the region of 23 so far before this rather extended break. I sort of agree with Lee. It's been a bit odd. And in a way, I think at the beginning of the break, I liked the fact that we were going to have not many, no Premiership games to play, with all the missing internationals, because as fans, maybe not Bears fans, but a lot of Premiership fans groan, don't they, that, you know, Saracens get six players in the England lineup, Saints got five plus this time round. But we haven't had that. But, you know, there have been a lot of injuries. We don't know who's going to be back for other teams. But, you know, to climb up the table, boys, I think we'll go on to chat about it a little later on. There was an interview with Pat. We've got to be winning five out of those six games. And it's weird. It's like going to Friday night under the lights to the first game of the season. I mean, the unique situation we've got this Friday, fans, is that Lee's coming. I mean, you know, I hope everyone's sitting down when they just heard that. But Lee Andrews is coming to the game on Friday night. Mates Rate tickets, of course. So we're going to be full house on Bears Beyond the Gate. Hopefully the crowd will be full house. And I think you're right. Saints fans are not looking forward to this fixture. We look at last year, 62-8 drubbing, wasn't it? We've beaten them at the St. Franklin Gardens. And I'm loving the fact that we are finally restarting the season again.
Miles, that is Churchillian.
Churchillian.
What you have done there. And I was questioning, and in my mind, the number of games. You said we'd played 23 games. I thought that seems a lot. I've just counted while you were giving that glorious monologue. We've played 25 games.
25?
Half game. 25 games. When you add in the preseason, you add in the Premiership Cup, you add in the Europe, you add in the couple of... And actually, we've had a... No wonder they needed an 8-week rest. They
were just nuts. I mean, I think a few went on holiday, didn't they? I think, and then came back, did a bit of pre-season.
But despite your Churchillian proclamations about us coming strong, Charlie, the voice of reason, did say that he felt that the top four were going to be Bath, Sarries, Saints, and then he ummed and ahed for a long time and then went with Chiefs.
He did.
So he didn't say Bristol. And I like that. I like that about him. He could have come on and humoured us and said that we'd sneak into fourth. But he said, you know, he knows his stuff, doesn't he? He sees rugby week in, week out, and he knew the reality.
Yeah.
But it was over that where his littling got out of bed.
Exactly. And then he
tapped his keyboard quietly.
I mean, it's a terrible question to ask, but you know, you've got to ask it, who's going to win it? And he just said, didn't he, that Tom Willis was just a player that was in the back of his mind as somebody who's very influential, and Saracens are past masters of integrating their England players back in. Atoje, ominously in form. Jamie George, obviously on a roll. Farrell's got nothing to lose. You know, you do sort of Ben Earl, obviously just unbelievable, best player in the world.
And I think we should say at this point as well, they've been there and they've done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the big thing that struck me about Dave Atwood's interview was, you know, we hadn't been there and done it, and Sarries have been doing it continuously for year upon year, haven't they? So, you know, they're used to being at the top end of, you know, finals and European finals. And I just think that kind of experience is something that's going to stand them in good stead at the end.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. Well, boys, we're not the only ones that have been speculating on the internet about the run-in. Obviously, our leader, Director of Rugby, Pat Lamb, has also been online.
I hope he's more than speculating.
Yeah, well, he was. I mean, clearly it was a nice kind of straight batted, probably a cover drive the social media team, putting out a nice, easy interview for Pat. Not really.
He's done a gower, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it was really, I mean, I think you'd obviously expect that to happen. Nice kind of sit down interview with a blue screen behind. Questions that were soft rather than probing. Having said all that, you know, I do think that we ought to listen. I mean, Pat talked a little bit about the season so far. He talked a little bit about how they've managed the break. I've snipped out a little bit of the audio, so let's listen to that, and then perhaps we can make some comments on that interview now.
Pat, 8 weeks without a league game, but the return of the Gallagher Premiership is now fast approaching. How have you found this period?
Well, firstly, we're excited. It's been a really unusual one, and how you manage and who's got it right, who's got it wrong, we'll know over those six games, remaining fixtures. But I think what we looked at, obviously, if you include pre-season, 23 games on the trot was unheard of, and it was a phenomenal effort by everybody. So we obviously needed a break. So we took that week off, came back for the Crusaders week, which was a great week, another week off, and then we had 2 weeks of really good work. that we could continue to grow the game, our game, the Bears way. And now we have this build-up and till next Friday night. So,
yeah, the league has been so competitive this year. And as you mentioned there, with six games to go, we've given ourselves a chance.
Well, it's in our control, you know. All of us, eight teams now, you know, you win probably five or six of those games of the last six rounds, you're in the playoffs. Simple as that. So it's in our control. And, you know, we won four out of the last five premiership games, and that's got us to the point where we can compete now. And now every game, and this is where, you know, we're going to need our crowd. We're going to need everybody, you know, all pulling together to approach every game and try and get the wins.
And on the subject of the crowd, if we throw it back to our last game at Ashton Gate against Bath, incredible atmosphere, an incredible occasion, and a real exhibition of attacking rugby from your side.
A lot of our crowd understand that we've been really close, and to see that support, and then more important to see how they reacted the way we played, and we really went back to you know, what we built the team on, and the fearless type of rugby we want to play. And it was a great game, great exhibition. Probably not as good as 2 years ago when I would rather have seen that, where we put 48-3 on Bath, where our attack was really good and our defence was really good. But it was the way that we played the game was really refreshing and good to see.
What are the key principles of that style of play that you want to see?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is about, you know, when we talk about attack mindset, it's a mindset that, you know, fearless. Don't be worried about making mistakes, because if you have an attack mindset and you're in the right place, you won't make mistakes. I don't want the boys to play with fear. I want them to work out what's on, choose the best decision, and then execute the skills. You know, sometimes you'll make errors, and if players do make errors, as long as they're making the right decision, you know, then you know, we can live with that, and we can fix that. So, and then the other one, obviously, for us is, you know, the way that we, you know, is a speed of ball that we work towards, the way that we transition, get into our shape, and attack as a team and defend as a team. So, you know, but, you know, if it's on, it's on. And don't be afraid.
Okay, Lee, I know you're champing at the bit like a, you know, like a gelding. Well, no, actually, you're not like a gelding. You're like a horse that isn't a gelding, desperate to get back to the stable. You want to say something because you were very keen to make a comment on that stuff.
I mean, as much as it was lovely that Pat, you know, did the charm offensive again with the supporters, I mean, there was a couple of things I wanted to mention, and I don't want to be overcritical again because, you know, obviously we are all behind him and our team. But, you know, worried, talking about, well, we want players to play without fear. Now, I feel that's been a big thing, that we have played with fear for most of the season. And I kind of feel that, I mean, obviously we're not privy to being on the training ground or anything else, but I think that fear kicked in from the top. And I think maybe Pat had lost a bit of confidence in how we should play the game. You know, it's already been talked about the fact that we needed to kick the ball more because we were watching other teams do the same thing. And I just feel that we did lose we had a lot of fear in our play. I think that's how we've played all season. And, you know, we have been close in games, but I feel that those games we would have won if we would have played without fear. So if that's something that's been addressed in this break, then I will be absolutely delighted to have our players playing, you know, the Bears way. I want to get our Bears back. And also, I kind of felt like, you know, Pat saying we don't want players to, you know, to kind of make mistakes. And you know, we're not worried about them, sorry, making mistakes. And I kind of feel like we have been worried about them making mistakes. It was almost like it was almost like a
therapy, you know, session.
Yeah, but almost kind of like we know where we've gone wrong, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like he's kind of saying I don't like it's that subject has been addressed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So again, I think if we have addressed that during this break, then we'll be a much better team going forward.
But it's, I mean, I'm just looking, I made some notes in the interview as well. And he said, you know, I want to go back to the Bears way. And I kind of feel like we're going back to something we always wanted, you know, so it's an indictment of things that have gone wrong. We want to play without fear. We want speed of ball, but we've got to keep the shape. But if it's on, it's on. And I think this is sometimes where there is that tension between structure and shape.
Yeah.
Heads up, when it's on, it's on. And sometimes it must be very difficult for the players to do that. You know, it's a, and of course, then you layer over making basic mistakes that come from pressure and so on. And then it's quite easy to see how the whole thing can unravel. But, you know, he said, we've had tough times in the last few years, but we've got exciting times with the new signings. And I was sort of thinking, well, that almost makes me feel like we've written off this season a little bit. And it's all, and he kind of talked about Bill Matter, you know, he's at the top of his game, very excited about Ben Grondona as a former number eight. I mean, he was licking his lips They then showed a few clips from the Bedford game that I hadn't seen of Grondona sort of smashing into a few championship players. So, yeah, it's an interesting to read between the lines. What do you think, Miles? What was your take from it?
Well, I think I agree with Lee. I mean, you know, prior to this little break, we'd won sort of four out of our five last Premiership games. And you're right. There was little sort of chat. Well, you know, it's a sort of media-led question, and it's the Bristol Bears media team, of course, and it was a lovely interview, and he was picking up fans. But you're right. He wants us to go back to this fearless style of rugby. But you're right. Unless that has been addressed during this break, I don't know how you deal with fear, really. I mean, what do you do? Get a big brown bear up at the HBC and get them to chase all the players off the pitch, and if they run away, then that's not good enough.
You don't need to bring your fantasies into the podcast, Miles.
A bit of a tongue-in-cheek there.
Or is it the Duchess's fantasies?
Yeah, maybe. So you're right, and he's talked about this attacking mindset, but why haven't we done this all season? Why are we languishing in eighth place in the Premiership table? It is really odd that we are potentially going to, he's asking us to flick a switch and then for the last six games, change our style of rugby. And it's odd. I mean, he didn't make any predictions about potentially what we want to do in the last six games, where we want to end up in the table. An unusual interview with things that really have gone wrong. Yeah, odd.
Yeah, Lee, you were sticking your finger up, but it wasn't the middle one. It was a forefinger.
No, it's just to tack alongside what Miles just said. Like, why did we lose the Bears' way then to start with? You know, how do we lose the Bears' way? And that comes from the top. That comes from coaching. So, you know, whichever way you look about it, the lack of confidence has definitely come from somewhere, hasn't it? It's like, how did we lose the Bears' way? Why, surely we lost the Bears' way because Pat Lamb thought at some point it wasn't the way we were going to win games in the future. And so if it wasn't going to be the way we were going to win games, how is it the way we're going to win games now? Does that make sense?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was thinking I might use a geography analogy. Is that we had a quite a complex map that showed us the way, and the players had just about got used to using that map, and then the map changed, and the scale of the map changed, and the symbols changed, and the players didn't have, and then we had new players in who didn't know about the map, and then their basic map reading skills were lacking, and the whole thing, the way just kind of just became a, it was like some year nine on Bronze D of E trying to figure out how to get across the Mendips.
I was going to say, this is like
they were just following their nose and just not looking at the map. They were just looking at what was in front of them. And if they saw a path, they just followed it willy-nilly.
Love it. I can now understand why our daughters got lost on D of E, because you didn't do the prep at the beginning of D of E, did you, Pete? And you weren't there in front of the Bristol Bears players showing them the way for the first two-thirds of the season.
A bit of input. you know, a bit of OS map skills might be the thing that's been missing. But Lee, you're not like that analogy. I can see you.
I do love the analogy, but ultimately, if you've got a leader, Pat Lamb, then he's the guy that reads the map. He's the guy that presents the clear instructions for the map and which direction all the troops go in. So either way, you know, you can put as many analogies on it as you want, but ultimately it all falls down to having the leader that shows you the right way.
Okay. Well, look, boys, I think before people listening wonder whether we've transitioned into Jog Pod rather than Bears Beyond the Gate, I think we need to move on.
Yeah. So, good plan.
Here we go, boys. It's going to be a bit of a frivolous task because we're recording this on Wednesday night. It's pretty good chance the team's going to be announced at midday tomorrow. So we've got a very short window of speculation of who's going to play. So I think what we're going to do, boys, is very quickly, I'm going to come to you one at a time. You're going to make one kind of comment about selection, maybe pick an area that you're not sure about. I mean, we have said that we appear to be have got rid of a lot of our injury problems, although there are a few caveats on social media about possible injuries that we don't know about. So I'm going to ask you each to make your own selection point, and then I'll make mine, and then we'll see where we're at. So I'm going to start with you, Miles.
Well, are you going to give me the easy task or the challenging?
Mate, I'm giving you any task. I'm giving you a task. You can draw your own map on this. I've given you a blank piece of paper.
Well, there you go. Really. Well, I think I suspect that a lot of fans have been along with us can sort of say that the backs sort of should write themselves, and if there's any deviation tomorrow at midday from Pat's selections, I feel all four of us, a lot of fans, potentially would be a bit gobsmacked. I mean, let's just start in the sort of halfbacks. You know, Randall is fit. He's been brilliant. He's got to start. AJ's got to start. I think Ibatoi on the wing's got to start. The centre partnership, if it is not Williams and Yancey van Rensburg, I think there's something wrong. And
what are you going to do, Miles? You were going to say,
I'm going to be fuming tomorrow. I'm going to put out some furious tweet on X or something, which is unlike me.
But
we don't know about fullback, who's fit. Malians, it's all been very quiet. I think Rich Lane has played himself into that position during Malians' absence. And I think Heward has been playing really well. So from sort of 9 to 15... that's who, if they're fit, I think should be selected.
Nice one, Miles. Lee, what about you?
Yeah, it's interesting because we don't really know about Max Malians, do we?
No.
It's gone very quiet, but I think that if he is fit, I think Malians starts at fullback, and I'd have Rich Lane on the wing, personally. But yeah, I think the rest are it, absolutely, as Miles said, I think that's all spot on for me.
Okay, so what about the forwards then? So, I mean, the debate we've got with the forwards is, and I think I've mentioned already, does Genge come straight in on the kind of back of riding on the back of the wave of the England second half of the Six Nations success? You know, he really looked like he got his mojo back. And, you know, do we get him on Friday to get that win under our belt and then maybe rest him later on, the Falcons game, maybe? Or but then again, Genji owes us a few games because we haven't seen him for a while.
Yes.
The other issue, I think, is the Jan Thomas question, or the front row question, I should say. I mean, Jan Thomas made an appearance for Bedford, which is a fantastic bit of news for everybody, when we were pretty sure that we weren't going to see him again this season. Is he fit enough to start? We need a bit of BS3 grunt up front.
We do.
And of course, we know that if we can get on top from the forwards, then we have got the weapons in the backs to do it. And then the other question, I think the big question is hooker. There was some speculation on the forum that we could, in a worst case scenario, have Thacker, Ogre and Capon injured, and we may be having to go to Big Fred Davis. Although that's not necessarily a bad thing, but then if Fred Davis does start, who's going to be the substitute? I think it was Thomas Gwilliam. So there's a few things. Lee, do you want to carry on? Over to you on the rest of the forward pack.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Genji's fit, he plays for me, because we've already just said we've got six games left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to play our best players, and Genji is one of our best players.
Yeah.
I do feel like as well, like the Hooker situation, I don't be as bad as all the speculation. I think that Arifaka's going to be fit, and I think he'll play. That's my gut instinct. And I know, you know, we've heard a lot of stories about he's not been fit, and you know, Fred Davis, you know, might have to step in. I think Faka will be playing, and I think Sinclair will be the front row. I think it'll be Genge. Yeah, I think it'll be Genge, Faka, and Sinks. I think Caulfield's still banned, isn't he?
Yes,
I think
we believe so. Yeah.
So I think we got James Dunn and Batley in the second row.
Yeah, picks themselves. And,
yeah, and I'd go Luatua. I'd go probably Fitz and then Bradbury.
Yeah,
Fit.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable selection.
I think that's the bookie's choice. I would say if you were looking at a slight outside bet, Dan Thomas, but I can't see how Thomas it will play if Fitz is captain.
Fitz
himself,
I think he'll be on the bench.
Luatua, definitely.
The tricky thing is,
and then I mean the wild card is Grondona. You know, he might be benched. It'd be interesting.
Well,
if he's on the bench.
We could chat about the bench because we could speculate. There's a lot of talented players coming back. Mm. You know, I've sort of, you know, the bench wise, you know, you've got to have Marmion as a backup scrum half, haven't you? Potentially, we know that Nualago's fit and Vakatawa. I don't know who you choose on the bench. I'm going to put Grondona on the bench. Why not, really? Where, Jay Tyack's fit? I mean, there's too many to choose from. Ed Holmes, Thomas. I mean, goodness sakes, I'm a bit stuck, really. There's so many players potentially are now fit. We could have a bomb squad on the bench, literally, to come on. But I don't know who it will be.
No, I think it's a really good point. And I think it's going to make the very short amount of time we've got to wait for this. I'm going to be very excited overnight. And then by the time most people listen to this pod, it'll already have been decided. But exactly. Lee, you want to make a point?
Yeah, I just want to make the point that actually how lovely it is that we're all mentioning Big Jan again, because, you know, it wasn't so long ago. We were really concerned that we wouldn't ever see him in a Bears shirt again. And, you know, it's been a remarkable comeback to get himself back into a position where he's fighting for a first team place again. And just mentioning his name for me is fantastic. He's one of the guys that, you know, is fighting for a place in the side.
I mean, isn't it fantastic now that potentially we have got three class players fighting for all three front row positions? I mean, it's phenomenal. We haven't even mentioned Max Leaf or Jake Woolmore, who can just step up at any point, can't we? So, I mean, what a headache for Pat to have. And this is great news going into the last six games of the season. I mean, I'm super excited.
Yeah,
I do feel with Grondona, though, I do feel we've got an absolute beast there. And I kind of feel like, you know, we know possibly a couple of players that are going to be leaving at the end of the season. And I think, you know, we've got his brother to come to step in as well. And
Big Santi.
Wasn't talk of him being released to Argentina for a training camp or something strange about that.
Everything feels really exciting at the moment. Like you said right at the beginning, Lee, you're excited, but I'm excited not just for Friday. I'm kind of excited for the next few weeks. And if our injury list is like as slim as we think, we've got a bounty of riches. And if we can have a really strong bench to back up a really strong 15, then who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? I might even come to two or three games.
We might even come to a couple.
There's only three left at home.
Hang on, what's home? We've got Falcons on a Sunday, and
we've got Sarries
on the Saturday in May.
Yeah.
Right, boys. Time's getting on. We've got to finish. We've got to get this bad boy out so people can listen to it. But I think, unless you boys have got one more, any more things to say, any other business, and I think, well, Lee, you've got some business.
Yeah, I thought we ought to mention, actually, congratulations to Harry Randall and his partner. Yes. You know, on the birth of, was it twins?
Yeah, I believe so, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair, congratulations.
It's not often that you have babies that are bigger than yourself.
Touché.
I mean, when I first saw those, that picture of his twins, I thought, what's Harry doing snuggly in a little cot like that? Harry and Callum in the cot.
you're on your own there, Pete. You're on your own, mate.
Oh, mate, I got to say, having fair play to the lad, I genuinely didn't realise that he was in the ballpark of having kids at his age. I thought he'd still be, you know, if I'd put my arm around him, I'd say, mate, just give it another few years. You know, it's going to be really tough. And twins as well. But fair play to the lad. Many congratulations to him.
Yes.
Yeah, well done. I think one final point we ought to mention, Pete, is to potentially the next pod, maybe out at around Easter time. I'm afraid us busy lads have got a few holidays planned.
I know, we've been waiting for ages, and now finally the season's back, and now we can't do any because of our own personal logistics. But we won't have one on Sunday. We know that for sure after the Saints game. But we're working tirelessly, as politicians say. To make sure that we have one at some point on the bank holiday weekend to review both the Saints game and the trip to King's Home, which is happening on the Saturday after. So we have one more thing. Lee's got his thumb up, or are you just saying it's time to go?
No, I was just saying it's going to be lovely to see some of our friends again on Friday night. And you know, it's just going to be, you know, the rugby family, we're all back together again, aren't we?
Yeah. And if you see us down the gate, come and say hello. And it's always nice. I mean, we have our kind of, we have a few people we often see round by the Lansdowne after the game, and it's always nice to stay for a pint afterwards. And
we might get a few fans' views as well. Yeah. We might hassle you for a little post-match interview. If you've had maybe 2 pints instead of 10, we might come your way. So,
I might take the portable recorder down with me. But by the way, boys, I went and bought some new batteries.
Good lad. So
it's got brandy. And I bought like really expensive ones, you know, the Duracell Mega Charge, something like
that. The Bunnings.
£50. Yeah. Anyway, right, boys, that is time. We've got to go. So thanks for listening. Have a good week. And everyone, up the Bears.
Up the Bears.